The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning, and today is December the 16th.
The views expressed on the following show
before Christmas, and we have to realize that Christmas is not only a secular holiday, but it's a religious holiday, and I hope people will be able to celebrate both of them, because the true meaning of Christmas is not presents and gifts, but the birth of Christ. So it's good to enjoy both of them, but remember what the meaning is. And right now we do have a Saratoga All-Star on our show, and he is the mayor-elect, John Safford. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick.
How are you?
I'm just fine. Glad to be here.
And you got a good Christmas present in the beginning of November.
Indeed.
I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
You've been on the show before. I always, you're quite a guy. I've always told you that. And, I'm really happy that the city will have somebody to mediate a lot of the problems that we had talked about before and a lot of them that you had talked about during your campaign.
Yes. Excited to be able to do some things, I think, that good things for the city.
Yeah. Well, you bring a lot of experience, too, in different fields to the office, which I think a lot of mayors have lacked. And one of the topics that you spoke about a lot was civility, which I think rang true with a lot of people. And your background in business will lend itself to doing that.
Yes, well, one of the things that somebody pointed out to me after I started using that term is civility is the root word for civilization. If you don't, and since then I've I've been struggling, working to come up with good descriptions of what all that means, but if you don't, you can't enforce a civil society. You can't, you can't
right.
make people civil.
Exactly.
And when you don't have kind of an ethos of respect for one another, though we're different, e pluribus unum is a very good descriptor of what America has always been about. We're all different, but we find a way to, I don't know whether it's taught or whatever it is. If you have a civil society, things work better. But when civility starts to break down, as it seems to have happened in our country,
well,
then,
the whole world, really.
Then you fall into these categories where in order to keep order, you need to have law enforcement or, you have to force people to be civil. And
sure.
That's a losing battle. Sooner or later, that's a losing battle.
Yeah, because what ends up happening when the people in charge of having to regulate civility because lack of it becomes damaging to the population because it just magnifies itself. I mean, look at the trouble police are in today.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, people were respected police, and you were afraid to do anything wrong because you didn't want to face the police, even though they were good. It's good people, the police were. But, there was a meme. You remember the comic The Far Side?
Yeah, sure.
Well, they had a meme in there, and I don't know if you ever remember Rocky and Bullwinkle,
sure.
the cartoon show, and there was they always had different parts of that show, and one of them was Mr. Peabody, and he used to go had a time machine and went back in time, and the kid said to him, "Where are we going today, Mr. Peabody?" And he says, "Actually, Sherman, we're going way back to the 60s when people had compassion and heart, and there were no cell phones or computers, and there was wicked cool music." But I think when you look back before, well, I always said the turning point in our society was 1969 when the flower children came about and drugs were running rampant. I think our society started to crack back then, and we started breaking down. I think before that, you know, you had the 50s and the early 60s and you know, the 40s with the Greatest Generation. So we started somewhere back a while ago showing some cracks in that.
It's interesting that you point out 1969. The entire year of 1969, I was in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I left in 68 and came back in 70. And I often say the country was totally different.
Yeah.
Between just that short period of time. So, and of course, and you know, there, I think I have a magazine at home about all the things that happened in 1969.
Yeah.
It's interesting that we're talking about that because, you know, that trajectory that was set at that time is now coming to full bloom, which
sure.
is sort of anti-civility in a way, you know.
Everything.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was
look what's going on in Israel, and that's affecting the U.S. a lot, too. I mean, our campuses and our society is not handling that well. We're getting too involved in another country's problems, and I mean, it's just, that's how it is today. And we've talked about this before. There's no room in debate anymore to agree to right. disagree.
That's right. What seems like, yes, that's correct.
You know, I mean, you're either on one side or you're on the other side, and there's no middle ground. And there used to be a lot of that before.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've been talking about is being, I know it sounds boring, but being a good chairman mm-hmm. of the board. We seem to, I mean, everything that you just said can be kind of summarized in that position. The sole role of a chairman of any board, I mean, again, we're talking about Western civilization here and representative government and, you know, parliamentarian procedure and Robert's rules and all those sort of things.
Sure.
Those are all, you know, kind of props for what it means to be a chairman.
Yep.
And the role of the chairman is to protect, to facilitate and protect. You want to protect the people on the board. You want to protect the people in the gallery or the sure. audience that are listening. And generally, a good chairman doesn't talk that much, except to keep order.
Right.
And that is not what you see in our meetings. You know, I certainly am empathetic to the difficulty of being a mayor. So I have not done a lot of negative stuff about Ron Kemp.
No.
It seems to me Ron just did not, this is one of the things I ran on, did not really understand how to do that.
Yeah.
And now I'm really thinking how best to do that myself.
Right.
I can definitely understand how difficult that might be, but that role will be critical to bringing civility back to those meetings and to City Hall.
Well, I think... and here again, this is, I think, is where your background is going to come in, because you work with a lot of homeowners associations, and so you are a facilitator, and I think, now this is my opinion, in that role, because you have to keep law for the homeowners association, but you also have to make sure the people are safe in those laws and can work within it. So yeah. I think basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, that is an example of how a chairman works, correct?
Well, I mean, yes, the chairman, to talk about homeowners association, a lot of, you know, unless you lived in one and have been on the board of one, you don't understand what, you know, it. But a manager, professional, it's called an agent, we're mm-hmm. a professional agent, but I've been doing that almost 20 years, and I have certification in it. I've done, you know, I educate myself, and as a mayor, I will educate myself, but you do everything. I mean, I do everything from the accounting to handling the dog problems to enforcing the rules, you know, everything that a city does with our five commissioners, I've done.
Right.
You know, so I have huge experience, but dealing with people. One of the things I like to say is I've probably managed 15 different ones over these 20 years.
Okay.
And every one of them been peaceful while I was managing there. And I'm pretty proud of that. And,
of course.
Yeah.
That's your leadership skill.
Yeah.
I mean, that's partially why you ran and the platform you ran on. And we talked about this before when you were on. Your background lends itself to working with the city and the people of the city to facilitate any problems that come up, and you handle them.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be able to use those skills for the city.
Sure.
Absolutely thrilled to do that.
Well, and you do have some tough problems to deal with.
Yes.
Not only with the with what the last council or the current council has caused, because I believe, like we were talking before about the lack of civility, that can go down from the top all the way down to the employees and the ones, you know, from top to bottom. That can affect everything,
especially in a commission form of government.
Well,
I know that
we're
going to have a conversation.
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
But we'll get into it. But okay. But I don't think there's any worse example than the form of government we have now. There is no representation. There's only if a citizen, well, we'll get into that with the commission.
Respond to your that concern, though, because now that I've been in City Hall quite a, you know, not a lot, I don't want, you know, I'm being very careful and being respectful of Ron Kim.
Sure.
And his people there. So, but it is true that so many of the people who work there are kind of demoralized because of this stuff. And they're good people. We have a lot of really good people.
A great workforce.
They're wonderful. But once, you know, if you get a little demoralized, not a little, a lot, it affects, you know, your ability to really do a good job.
Sure.
And then everything slows down and people don't get what they need. And,
right.
You know, yeah, I hope to change all of that.
And that can, you know, I mean, a little bit of irritation at work can magnify itself to the point where how do you get out of that? But you'll do a great job on that. There's a huge topic in Saratoga. And it's happening in almost every city in the country, is homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's growing all over. I mean, some of the larger cities have probably more homelessness than they do residents. How are you going to, I know you've got to get in there and get your hands around things. And there is a task force that Mayor Kim appointed. And I don't know if you'll work with that workforce, partial part of it, and appoint some of your own people. But what kind of ideas do you have about trying to work on that problem?
Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start from the beginning. We had talked about how people live paycheck to paycheck, and it doesn't take much for them to become homeless. And then there's other problems along with it, with alcohol and mental illness relation. But, you know, start off.
So I break homelessness down into three categories of people. I mean, it's a lot more nuanced than that, but there are people that you're just describing that want to be helped. They don't want to be homeless. This includes kids who have run away from their houses. A lot of people don't think of that. Domestic violence creates a lot of homelessness. Yeah. The inability to keep paying your rent or your mortgage is a cause of that. But those folks are truly the ones you want to do. You want to focus at least a good portion of your effort on making sure that they get into housing, because those are the people that will continue to be good members of society. Then you have what I struggle with the word, but kind of professional homeless. Mm-hmm. After a certain amount of time, which is why you want to intervene as soon as possible. I've been engaged with the homeless population since I came here. Since I didn't have much to do, I had sold off some of my companies. And so I ran the breakfast program for the Salvation Army about 20 years ago and got to know a lot of the homeless people and became friends with a couple. They've all died. Generally, people who live that lifestyle don't live very long. But they are some of the most inventive people. If some could just be encouraged to start a business or something, they would be incredibly resourceful people. I almost have respect for them, but part of their resources is they learn how to work the system, mm-hmm. and how to basically take advantage of other people's emotional thinking about them, and they work it. But then you have a third group that really can't help themselves, the addicted,
mental illness.
Those two seem to get mixed together, but you have both drugs and mental problems with a percentage of them. And so each one of those categories needs to be thought of separately, and services need to be provided differently, which makes it a lot more complicated. Go ahead.
No. And like you said, a lot of those people that have drug, alcohol, or mental illness don't want to be helped.
Well, they can't let themselves be. I think of them a little bit differently than the professional homeless. Okay. A lot of really professional people are, when I call them professional homeless, I don't know how else to describe them, are not addicted. They just are addicted to that lifestyle.
Right.
They just like the idea of being outside of society and making it. Survivors. There's sort of they help one another. By the way, a lot of them help one another. It's very I do a lot. I do like stand downs. I do food. I do all kinds of things to help people in those situations. And you'll often see somebody taking, more than their share.
Yeah.
But 90% of the time, 10% of the time they're selling it. But 90% of the time, I would say they're thinking of somebody else that could use it. And it's a very interesting population. However, you mentioned something very important to our population. But the fact is that we now have a lot percentage of population, we have a larger percentage of homelessness than San Francisco.
Really?
That is, because you hear all about San Francisco, but
right.
Of course they have a large population.
Right.
But we have a larger population here.
Per capita.
And it's growing. It's growing because not only are we seen as a community that gives,
right.
you know, But with the low barrier shelter now, there's nothing asked of people to give them shelter, and that actually is a a philosophy. There's what's called a housing first philosophy, and then there's a more there's more of a philosophy that you have to, somebody has to pay somehow, you know, in order to start getting their life in order.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's playing out right now, and it will play out in my mayorship.
Sure. We had talked a little bit before the show, and I think, too, the perception of Saratoga being a wealthy city where they can get more, quote, benefits, and I don't mean that, you know, just get more in the way of help. And Saratoga is not a very wealthy community. I mean, we do have wealthy people that live in Saratoga, but, you know, it's made up of mostly your average middle class people who work, and we're not very wealthy. Saratoga is a very giving community.
Yes.
But there's that perception. So, you know, they get here, and then they're just like the same conditions where they came from.
It's interesting what you say. The if you compare our average income here mm-hmm. to the communities around us, Saratoga is fairly low. Exactly what you said. I mean, obviously, during track and that sort of thing, there's some very, very wealthy people.
Right.
But they don't live here. And so, therefore, their income isn't counted in that. But the perception that we're wealthy is, yeah, but, you know, and the same, even though we're not, we're very giving.
Yeah, we are.
We're a very giving community. Very, very much so, oriented to helping others.
Yeah, and helping the city. I mean, you know.
And helping the city.
A lot of our citizens during the building back of Saratoga in the 80s and 90s participated with the city to get things done. I mean, I'm in Kiwanis, and I remember back in the 80s, they were getting the carousel from the beach out there and putting it in Congress Park, and they had a fun, everybody had a fund drive to get donations to help the cost of that, and it was overwhelming.
Yes.
And so really, I mean, we are a giving community and one that will work with the city. I don't know. It's a tough thing, homelessness. It really is. It's very hard to get your hands wrapped around it.
Well, I am a net zero person with regard to homelessness.
Right.
There's other implications in net zero, but that means that we need to have procedures in place that keep the population at certain, in other words, the number of, you will never eliminate homelessness.
No.
It's just constantly, and especially now as things get more difficult economically.
Mm-hmm.
So you set a goal not to eliminate homelessness, but to make net zero. In other words, the number coming in equal the number getting into homes and finding solutions.
Right.
And so I'm dedicated to that. Right now, we don't have that. We have, we've almost doubled in the last year, or even since we opened up this, you know, like what you were saying is not uncommon now. People are sending people here.
Right.
Thinking that somehow we're going to be able to meet their needs better than someplace else. It's a hard problem. We're growing. So naturally, our professional not-for-profits who deal with this are asking for more money,
right?
Because you know their operations are growing. So I mean, the hard thing about it that is that the more homeless there are, the more successful they are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I was on the, I don't know, 4 or 6 years, I was on the Community Development Block Grant Committee.
Yeah.
And every year you saw the nonprofits that dealt with family issues or homeless issues, the amount of requests kept growing and growing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, you only had a certain amount of money that the federal government gave you for that, and every year it went down.
Right.
But it's heartbreaking to know about this stuff, dealing with it, and not being able to wrap your hands around it and get it to the point, like you said, of net zero.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard. But you have experience in dealing not with homelessness, but working with them. And, you know, I always said you're a fantastic person, and if you'll educate yourself on issues rather than just trying to deal with the status quo,
right,
and, you know, provide more to the certain amount of people.
Well, the last 8 years, my primary focus has been on veterans. You know, veterans, there's a lot of, you know, they served the country.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a very different. Yeah, if you know my background, I struggled when I came back, so I understand that. So I've been, you know, through the Elks, I'm the veterans chairman for the Elks here. I've been able to do a lot more for veterans, and there are a number of homeless veterans that don't know the extent of services that are available to them.
Exactly.
Or don't want them.
Well, I always remember, well, you always have that segment that just, you know, they don't know, and there's some that don't want them. I this goes way back, but my grandfather came from Italy and became a citizen when he was 18. And a year later, World War I started, and he enlisted in the Army. In the U.S. Army, and he fought in Italy.
Yeah.
But he was wounded on the field, and they have a thing where they run by the soldiers and try to grab all their dog tags so they can, you know, say that they died in action, you know, and they had their names. Well, he was wounded, and they went by, grabbed his dog tags, because they thought he was dead, and a medic was the last one through and heard him moan.
Wow.
Picked him up and carried him off the field.
Wow.
But he was listed on the roll of his unit as died.
Whoa.
Died in action.
Yeah.
Well, as he went on in life, he never was afforded any veterans benefits.
Uh-oh.
Because, and when he was in his 60s, I was able to drive. So I took him down to the local county veterans, and they said, you don't qualify. And I was, you know, I said, why? And they said, because he's dead. And I said, what do you mean he's dead? And they said, well, here's his unit, Luigi D'Agostino. He died on the field. I said, but he didn't die on the field. Here he is. And so he never, I didn't know how to work the system to
right.
get that.
Yeah.
And then he died a few years later, but a lot of veterans just don't understand.
When did you go?
Oh, this was in the late 60s.
Oh, because the guy, Frank, who is now at head of that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any veterans listening, they just have to go out there to Balsam Spa next to the, what is it, Northline. There's a Stewart's there. And,
right.
And their office is right, sort of yeah. little plaza right next to it.
No, this was back in the late 60s.
Oh, I mean,
when
if there's
they
any
did
veterans
have
out there that don't know what to do about something, you go there.
That's a wonderful support system today.
Oh, yeah.
But there are a lot of veterans that don't know the system. And, and like you said, you work with them. And it's sad because a lot of homelessness, a lot of older veterans need help.
Young veterans.
And well, young veterans too.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, you know, I'm a member of the American Legion here, and we have a Be the One program.
Uh-huh.
That's for prevention of veteran suicide.
Right.
These are young. That's who, you know, in a way, I'm kind of going on my vet thing here, but
that's okay. Well,
but if you fought for your country or you put your life on the line and you don't think your country respects that, that's like the police problem.
Oh, definitely.
It's a serious problem.
Well, I don't think any war that a soldier goes into comes out 100%. Uh-huh. I mean, war is a terrible thing, and you see a lot of stuff that you don't want to. All right, so let's get on with, you also talked about the permitting process.
Oh, yes.
And that's always been a huge problem in Saratoga. So what are your thoughts on that?
The permitting process, so that is directly under the mayor.
Okay.
And what I am realizing is that the management of it, the literal management of it, falls usually on the deputy mayor. The problem is that every 2 years or every 4 years, you might get a whole new manager in there. And any of the procedures that were good, they're great people in there. They really are. But the procedures, we really can't talk about the procedures without realizing that the whole planning process is in three commissions. You have engineering, which is in public works.
Right.
You have code enforcement, that's in, you know, public safety, and then you have the planning process. And then you've got your boards. And if people are not talking and getting along at City Hall, or are afraid to talk to one another because the commissioners are fighting,
right,
it is not good. So civility, this lends itself directly to what we're talking about. If commissioners are fighting, City Hall almost stops working.
Right.
And that's one of the problems that's happening right now in that permitting process, because we're at 18 weeks. I think we have 340. You know, and the other side of it is that the city wants to grow.
Yeah.
And there are people submitting, and they want to fix up their places or build new places or new businesses.
Or an addition.
Whatever. And it is taking so long. People are frustrated. So I'm well aware of this problem. How to fix it, I'm working on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all this is a learning process. Yeah. I mean, to change, because this has been going on. We moved up here, and my wife is from Saratoga, but I moved up here in 86 after we got married. And my gosh, it took, just to put a deck on, it took months and months, And I mean, my mother, and where I grew up, worked for the city engineer. And in that department, they handled everything. There was a building inspector, a plumbing inspector. Yeah. And that was all under one, of course, it wasn't this form of government, but it was all under one office.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
I mean, you submitted plans, and I think within a week or two, you had the go-ahead to get things done.
One of the things, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, one of the software packages that I had developed and sold all over the state, was planning departments, code enforcement, planning departments, engineering, all that, tying that into a software package where everybody talked to one another.
Uh-huh.
I put in over 70 of them. I'm well aware of what automation can do, but it is next to impossible to do under the commission form of government.
Right. It is. It's a very tough form of government. Unfortunately, it was designed for a good purpose back during a tragedy in the early part of the 1900s. And after it solved the problems then, it just grew, shouldn't have, because of the way things work. Back then, they had to get things done because of that flood in Texas. But anyway, Well, we have a caller, so we'll take this call. Morning, caller.
Hey, Rick, it's Nancy here. I was listening with rapt attention while you were talking about the homelessness issue, and yeah, I like how your guest has, you know, sort of summed it up in three categories. There's another category of what I call the non-working class. They used to belong to the working class, but they have not worked in so long that they have just sort of fell by the wayside. But do you think that one of the reasons that homelessness has just exploded is that there's too many safety nets, there's too many programs that do not incentivize getting back to work and being contributing members of society? And because a lot of these places, like certain shelters I'm not going to name and certain nonprofits, have just become money-making for-profit, even though they say they're nonprofit, they are money-making businesses. You know, it's a business, the business of homelessness. It's a money-making sort of racket.
Well, this is John. I wouldn't categorize it exactly that way. The folks have good, very good intentions, but what happens is what you're describing. The agencies grow, they become more powerful, there's more people employed, and then all of a sudden you become very defensive of your employees and trying to keep them working, you know. Yeah. It's a rock and a hard place to balance that, but yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, and I think also you have to, you know, here again, how you have to weed out the people that are able to work and try and find positions for them. And it might be starting out at low-level positions so that they can work their way up. But, I mean, we were talking earlier, there's so many divisions of homelessness that you have to wrap around. And, you know, that may be one of the problems you'll have is how to weed out the people that can get back in the workforce and not become dependent on, and that's a hard thing. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, well, I mean, it all has to do with their motivation and their belief that they can be significant, you know.
Thanks, Nancy. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. You're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. The phone number in the studio is 518-580-5783. And we're here this morning with Mayor-elect John Safford, and who's a great guy. Been on the show before. I always respected and admired his counsel and his approach to different things. So I agree with the permitting process. I think you can try, and here again, you'll have to work with multi departments to kind of streamline that.
Well, there are things, there have been better, you know, managers over the past. Uh-huh. And so we're consulting with them to find out what things we can do to start making this different. And it's mainly just giving some direction in recognition to the people who are there. There's good people there. We just have to manage them better because, you know, the system, by changing all the time, and, you know, but we definitely have some ideas how to help that.
Yeah, well, that's good. Maybe you get them in one room and show a slide presentation on how to get along, how to get
well,
things.
They get along very well.
No, but how to get things streamlined and work with each other to get the timing down a little shorter period, you know.
I'm working on that right now.
I know you are. One of the things that I wanted to talk about a little bit, and then I want to go on to your vision of the city and you know, what you think that you'll be able to do or what you would like to do, and that is tying the good and bad of the commission form of government. Mm-hmm. Your opinions on that?
Because, well, I think we should be clear that over the years you and I have been opposite sides of this issue.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Exactly.
You've been for and I've been against.
Against changing it,
sticking to the tradition of it, the fact that it has worked over these years. I mean, one of the things that this this current administration has been somewhat dysfunctional, but yet, in spite of that, because, you know, you had the silos, public works has not been very much affected by that, by the way. Public works has continued to do a stellar job. And if you had a different kind of structure, I mean, it could have, you know, because he's totally independent, he was able to operate independently. And at least from everything that I see, that public works has been working very well.
Well, you know what? I'm not saying here again. I am pro. I like the city manager form. And there are people that come up to me and say, oh, the city manager of Podunk, Illinois, was just fired.
Yes.
And you know what? How many? I don't think anybody's done a study on how many mayors have been so bad that they were not reelected.
Right.
So you can't compare that. But public works has been a good department. Yet talk about how public works with public safety when they have to get something done that affects both of them, and they don't work together, and you know, there's just so much bad. I mean, that's why there's only, I think, a dozen commission forms of government left in the country.
Yes.
It's just not the way to run, especially, I mean, when Saratoga was a small town, a very small city, that may have worked well. But, you know, any big city now needs to be run like a big business. And you need a person that's the head of a big business that can delegate the authority to different, and I look at this as different departments, but yet you need a person at the head. Any corporation can't be run by five heads.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the government at the county runs by city manager.
Right, and look what happened.
And it works well.
It works well, and look what happened in 2021 when they went and gave extra pay to the employees for that. They let the city manager go.
Yes.
So you always have that option. I think people have it in their minds, well, once you appoint a city manager, they're there for life, and the council can't tell them what to do, which is not a fact. So there are good that can come out of a different form of government. And people say to me, only because I was involved, not that I'm an expert on any of this, believe me, what about a strong mayor? And I said, well, you know what? It's still a popularity contest. And you can get rid of the mayor by voting him out, but I don't think a strong mayor can do the job that a city manager can do. They're trained in that form of government. They've had education in that. And, you know, our deputies could be department heads like they are now.
Yes, which, honestly, if we had a permanent department head for planning, it would be totally different.
Yeah, or for anything. I mean, changing out an administration every 2 years is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked before about this, that in the last election, all five commissioners were changed out at once, and you had five people that really didn't understand the workings of their department come in, and I think that caused part of the chaos.
Oh, you're right. Yes, that was the first time in a long time that five new people came in.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think if you had some continuity with department heads, unless they weren't doing their job and were warned once about, you know, how the department should be run by
let's just talk about that for a second, because there are basically three or four. I am a city manager. I mean, that's what I do. A managing agent of an H&O is a city manager.
Right.
It's literally what I do. So the last time ran through, I was at a lot of those meetings and was thinking that a city manager. But let's just talk about the structure for a second. Between these different types, the main idea behind any of these is that instead of having five different heads of five, they call them silos, of five different
departments,
where the management is separated, any of these changes, because there's a weak manager also for
right.
There's a strong manager, and then there's a city manager. Is that one person is at the head of the management.
Right.
And you have then department heads that, you know.
You've delegated the authority to,
yes,
but oversee it.
Yes, but you have one person who then can coordinate different parts of it, which is, as I just described, under the commission form of government, there is no way where you have an authority to coordinate between various departments.
Right.
Okay. And it creates immense problems the way it's done now. There are still people who favor that, but it's something I'm starting to realize as I get more and more into this, how difficult it is to even pay a bill.
Yeah.
I mean, if you follow, I mean, this is, I'm a businessman, you know, so paying bills is very important. You want to keep, you know.
Right.
You know, and now it has to, like, somebody initiates the bill, then it has to be approved by finance, and then it has to go to the accounts to rectify, or, you know, to,
sure.
to, and then it has to go back to, I don't know who writes the check. I guess accounts might write the check, but these things get lost. Sometimes vendors don't get paid for months.
Right.
And sometimes if it's a big check, that could lead to lawsuits, and has. So at any rate, these different, I'm thinking, so in a weak mayor, so there's still five people who decide.
Right.
It would operate basically the same way, but the mayor would be in charge of
the departments.
Yes. The only difference is that with a weak mayor, the mayor wouldn't have a veto type
right.
power or total power. Strong mayor would. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have a strong mayor kind of running everything in the city, and then you'd have a council that advised
that legislate,
them. Yeah,
right.
That would legislate and create policy, and then it'd be up to the mayor to carry that out, but the mayor has more power than a manager would. A manager cannot go outside the bounds of the
legislators.
Yes,
right.
But a strong mayor can. A strong mayor can veto things, or, you know, can make decisions on their own.
Right.
So you have these various ways of doing it, but the bottom line for me is a better management structure,
mm-hmm.
Just from a business standpoint.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, my political leanings are my own, and I'm not tied to one party, but good or bad, our last president was a business person.
Yeah.
And he tried to run the government like a business, which in a way worked.
Because it does and it doesn't.
You need ideas in there outside of political mentality.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
I think when you get stuck in a political mentality and you don't know what's going on in the outside world, it's very hard to make decisions based on the reality.
I mean, we could talk about political mentality.
Well, sure we can. Sure we can.
Business mentality.
I love it. I love it. Right. But, I think it's very hard. You had said in an earlier discussion before the show, only 45% of the people voted in Saratoga.
No, 45% voted for me.
Oh, voted for you.
Yeah.
Well, but if you look at the amount of people that voted, I'm sure it's less than half of the population of Saratoga.
Oh, yeah. I think 8,200 voted?
Okay.
This time? It was a low turnout, and that's typical of elections that are not national. Or,
right.
You know.
Now, but you would think, why would that be? I mean, a person would want a stake in their own city.
Well, you don't. They don't. A lot of people are just, you know, the media is so focused on national issues. And
right.
People watch that most of the time.
And we lost our newspaper, our local newspaper, where
yeah.
it used to be more city-oriented.
Yeah.
But people are apathetic. I mean, if I always said the thing about Saratoga had always said was, if your leaves are picked up and you turn your tap on and get water, everything is fine.
No, it's
your
true.
Your roads get plowed, everything is fine.
That's what I'm saying. Public Works does that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to see the behind the scenes about writing the check or how long it takes to get a permit passed.
Or the fact that businesses won't come here.
Right.
Because it takes so long to do business here.
To do business. And they don't see that, so they don't care about it. But if it affected them, then they'd be, you know, into it more. And I always believed that a person should be involved in what goes on with the city entirely, not just what benefits you.
Yeah, I mean, according to the little survey that the students did here at Skidmore, there's about, I think they said 24% of the people are actually engaged with what happens here.
And that's, you know what, that's not right. I mean, it is the norm, but it's not right.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just, it frustrates me because I've been involved in things in my hometown. My father was a councilman, and so I've been around that, and I just know how frustrating it is when you don't get the support, only when you do something wrong.
Right.
Do people say...
And that's typically, that's exactly what happened this time, you know.
Yeah.
And why I'm sitting here, actually.
Well, you're sitting here, because you're a good guy and you're going to be here. We've got about 9 minutes left. So I want to talk about your vision.
Yeah.
What your vision is for the city.
Well, actually, this is a, you know, right now, and this is what I'm challenging everybody with, is that when I do the state of the city, which is, you know, like toward the end of January, I want it to be a vision for the city. What is this city going to look like in 10 years? What is our vision? We have health, horses, and history, all kind of facts, right?
Yeah.
But there isn't a real vision for the city. I mean, you know, I come from Buffalo, which is known as the city of good neighbors, for example, right? Whether it still is. That's more like a vision statement of who we are here. So I'm kind of working off of health, history, and horses, but trying to, you know, that is a statement of the past.
Yeah.
What is the statement of the future? And so I'm challenging everybody I talk to come up with, you know, what you think the city should be here in 10 years. And I'm going to try to speak to that when I do the state of the city.
Well, this was back when I moved up here, so it had to be, you know, late 80s or early 90s, and Ken Klotz was Commissioner of Finance, and he was a guest speaker at our Kiwanis Club, and after, I said to him, you know, what I see right now, and this was late 80s, early 90s, happening in Saratoga, is you're letting unbridled growth come into the city. And why don't you have managed growth? I said, you have all these people moving in, these developments being built, businesses coming in, and you're tying into old infrastructure. And I said, that's going to cause problems down the line because you're not putting new infrastructure in. You may put new infrastructure when you're building a housing development, but you're tying into the mains, which are old. He said, well, it builds up the tax base. And I said, yeah, but you need more police and fire for the amount of population you have. So, I mean, I don't know. I think right now it's just gotten away so far. I don't think you can have managed growth in the city anymore. I mean, it's...
Well, I mean, you know, we were talking, the result of that, you know, and I've thought about this a lot, is what has happened with the planning department. Attitude that growth is bad, that we don't want that, has, I think, been one of the major factors for the slowdown in the planning department.
Okay.
It's a rock and a hard place because, you know, the thing is that if, but, you know, in the 70s, this place was a dead city, and it came back. Because there was an openness to have people come in or people who live here actually try to develop new ideas and new ways. Right now, what is growing is not for profits, not business. Yeah, the very thing that we were just talking about, the not-for-profit people are the big profit centers, you know.
Right, I think
and
Nancy...
Because we have discouraged people who want to come in and develop and do things and get stuff done and, you know, be dynamic in the city. So this is, what you're describing right now is a real rock and a hard place that I find myself right in the middle of.
Yeah.
You know, I am, see, people... The problem is because of our zoning.
Yeah.
The only thing that's profitable to be put up is a condo.
Yeah.
You know, and you see these high-rise condos. Now, that's according to the UDO. And our zoning, with the way we're zoned, and I love the concept of city in the country, but the way that we're zoned forces that upon people. And they're not even, a lot of people aren't even doing that anymore because it's so hard to build here.
Yeah.
You know, we have a real problem that I'm concerned about because we're getting, you know, we have many rich people and many poor people. And we are, this is happening in the country, the middle class, the people who actually are the dynamic engines for society.
Right.
Are not here. I mean, they're here, but they're fading away.
Right. Well, one of the things that I see too is that Saratoga has become a tourist destination.
Yeah.
And in a tourist destination, you have a lot of businesses, a lot of restaurants, with people that aren't making a lot of money and can't afford to live here.
That's right.
So they have to live outside the city. And it takes money to get into the city, and they're not making a wage that affords that easily. So I think there's, like you said, we're between a rock and a hard place because that's the growing part of our business now.
Exactly. Two-thirds of our taxes are paid for by that. You know, it's why we have a very low tax, probably the lowest city tax rate in the state. But so we have to have a conversation about what growth means, and the subsequent changes in the look possibly of the city, and how that might look, and that is a huge problem that I must talk about some other time.
We will, and you'll be on. And okay. We talked about this. I want to offer you every 2 month show where we can talk about what's going on in the city and maybe progress gotten that you put into effect.
Two months is kind of a short, you know, maybe every 3 months.
Every 3 months. we'll call it the Mayor's Corner. You can come in and we'll discuss some of the problems that you were working with and some that you've eased up on and the progress that you're making.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're able to do that, that's fine. We can talk about that later. But, John, I want to wish you the best. And I'll stop in and see you when I can office.
I'm going to be out and about, though. I'm not going to be there very much.
Well, we'll find out.
I have a great deputy.
Yeah. Well, no, and that means a lot, too. But I'm sure we'll see each other a lot. But I want to thank you. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And to everybody listening.
Okay. Yes, everybody. And I'll see you next week.
Don't forget it's religious.
That's right. That's right.
What that gift is.
But...